Buy with Rob is your best choice when purchasing your new home in the Puget Sound area. Call 360-710-9425 today and get started on the best home buying experience you will ever have. Go to buywithrob.com today.
I swear to God, this is better than anything on television.
Why can't we go to a movie?
A movie? That's not real. It's the same as television. Trust me, this is real.
Hello?
Podcasts are verbal narcissism for ugly journalists.
Hello, can I talk to Mr. David? Dave Bowman?
Approach and identify.
Hello?
I'm Jason Ritterizer. This election is about the future of our democracy. A choice between Trump supporter Dino Rossi or someone who will stand up to this administration. I became a criminal prosecutor to protect people and this country from harm. We just witnessed President Trump denounce American law enforcement and let Russia get away with attacking our nation. Here in Ellensburg, we call that treason. I'm Jason Ritterizer. I approve this message to change Congress before it's too late.
From the Buy With Rob studio located in beautiful Silverdale, Washington, this is the Dave Bowman Show. Now, here is your submarine-qualified, well-coffeed, stuffy, elitist history buff host, Dave Bowman.
Hey, good morning, good evening, or good afternoon, wherever you are, whatever you do. A lot of things happening in the world today, most of them far beyond our control, you might say. So perhaps it's time we took a pause and thought about life and thought about the laws of gravity, politics, the news, science. Don't touch that dial, just try to hear me out for a while. Well, a new political ad that you just heard pretty much jumps on the Russia virtue signaling bandwagon. Meanwhile, Captain Ammon shows us that terrorism is more about religion than politics. The NFL has a bigger problem today, and Major League Baseball is looking to expand. Obviously, I have an opinion about that. Here's how you get a hold of me. The text machine is area code 209-565-DAVE. That's 565-3283. The email is dave at thedavebowmanshow.com. And, of course, we're on the web, live on Facebook, live on YouTube, as well as at thedavebowmanshow.com, Facebook, Twitter, and even iTunes. E lo qui conizio, the greatest enemy of knowledge is not ignorance. It is the illusion of knowledge. Happy Friday, everybody. Glad you're here, wherever you might be. We made it through the week. Hurrah, hurrah. Seems like it's been a long week, doesn't it? And happy anniversary of two space milestones. Of course, it was this day in 1969 that the first Apollo moon landing occurred. Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin landing on the moon. One small step for a man, one giant leap for mankind. And it was also this day in 1976 that Viking 1 landed on Mars. Now, as big as the moon landing was for me, and it was big, I was five when it happened. I really remember Viking, that whole, because that was exciting. You know what that was? That was the precursor to a manned landing on Mars. See, when we went to the moon, we sent a bunch of probes that flew around Mars, around the moon. Then we flew a bunch of probes that landed on the moon, surveyors, and then we landed on the moon. Well, 1976, we'd flown a bunch of Mariner probes around Mars, and then we flew Viking to land on Mars, and everybody was expecting that the next step would be, let's put a footprint on Mars, and unfortunately, we're still waiting for that. So, it was quite a celebration. Yeah, I know, it was supposed to land on the 4th of July, but you know, it's NASA, I mean, they probably forgot to shift from Gregorian to the new calendar or whatever. That's a joke because remember when they crashed a lander on Mars because they forgot to convert feet per second to meters per second and whoops, poof, we basically bombed Mars at that point. At any rate, speaking of science, and we are speaking today about science on the show, I have presented over the past week a couple of theories. One, that the entire Russia probe is nothing more than virtue signaling. And secondly, that terrorism is religious based, not politically based. Well, when you say things like that, you have to be prepared to back them up. Unfortunately, in this line of work, in the business of chat radio, more attention is focused to the immediate, how can I get people mad approach to life, as opposed to the longer term, what are we trying to do here? But because this is no longer corporate radio, and really I don't have a boss other than you, the listener, and myself, we can kind of lengthen things out. And so I did this. I presented those theories, and of course, proper scientific methodology means that I have to test those theories, and we have to back them up, and we have to follow the right methodology. So we have to make an observation or a set of observations. We have to ask questions about that. We have to form our hypothesis, which is a tentative description of what's been observed, and then make predictions based on that hypothesis. We have to take all this information that we've taken, Russia, terrorism, we have to ask questions about it. We have to study it. We have to think about it. And then we have to say, okay, if I am right about this, then this is what will happen downstream. If that doesn't happen, it means that the theory was wrong. That's all it means. It means you go back to the drawing board and you reobserve things and you relook at them and you rethink about them and you try to come up with, okay, it doesn't work that way. How does it work? Now, to say that we don't do things that way is, I mean, even today, the theory of relativity, I saw an article, I think it was the day before yesterday, that even the theory of relativity, Einstein's well-established theory of, you know, how things work, is still undergoing testing. They still test it on a regular basis. Okay. And eventually, if something that the theory of relativity predicts doesn't happen, in other words, it shows that the observations show that to be incorrect, then the entire theory goes in the trash can and we start over again. This is how science works. This is the way it's supposed to work. Okay. Obviously, there's some politicization of things. There's some, you know, there's politics in everything. And there's, you're dealing with human emotions and human feelings. And science is not as pure as it would like to be. But that doesn't mean that it's bad. It just means that there's people involved. And so anytime you get people involved in something, things are going to be, you know, a little touch and go sometimes. You know, somebody's ego gets hurt, somebody else's ego gets stroked, those kind of things happen. So I gave you a couple of theories this over the past week, and I wanted to kind of look at them because one of the things that I predicted was that the Russian investigation, the whole Russian nonsense thing, is simply virtue signaling. That's all it is. And that if you don't toe the line, you will be labeled a Russian stooge. You will be labeled a Russian sympathizer. You will be essentially called a communist. There was a time in this country when that happened. The 1940s and 50s and even in the 30s, there was a backlash, I guess, against communism. Now, look, I'm not a communist. I don't like communists. I don't agree with communists. I think that communism is a hideous ideology that has been used to rationalize the murder of millions upon millions of people, far more than the Nazis ever even dreamed of throughout its history. It is a violent, corrosive, destructive ideology that had to be eliminated. It had to be defeated. I spent a good deal of my life working on the defeat of communism. And I'm proud to say I had a hand in that the first time around. Now, the second time around, doesn't seem to be going quite as well, unfortunately, and that's part of the issue right now, is that we're a little concerned about those kind of things, and we're a little concerned about where we're going to go with that. But there was a time in this country when to be called a communist was tantamount to the worst insult you could give to someone. You were questioning their Americanism, you were questioning their loyalty, you were questioning everything about them. Whether they really were a communist or not, you did that. There was a time in this country, believe it or not, when calling someone German was a hideous insult. Oh, you Kaiser-loving Hun, was not an uncommon insult to be hurled at people as they expressed opinions that didn't toe the line of the majority. Then it became, you're a Nazi, and then it became, you're a communist. And now today, it's become, well, you're a Russian. You must love the Russians. You must like them because you're not towing to what we believe, what we say. And it's odd to me that it's the same people who, you know, in previous incarnations of this, didn't seem to have much of a... In other words, the people that are saying, you're Russian favoring, are now the same people that before were being called communists and didn't like it. See what I'm saying? It's weird how things have changed along the way. This hyper-patriotism that all of a sudden is coming from those who hate the current administration is bizarre to me. The embracing of virtue signaling that hitherto it ignored and hated and mocked. Hey, the 80s called. They want their foreign policy back. Right. Now all of a sudden is embracing that exact same ideology and using it against people that have spent their entire lives opposed to that. This is why I say this entire Russian investigation, this entire Russian fiasco, it's just virtue signaling. That's all it is. It's just a bunch of people who want to make you feel like you're on the outside. You're not part of the truth. You're not a true believer. And so until you become a true believer, well, we're just going to mock you by labeling you. Labels are wonderful, aren't they? Remember how the left objected strenuously to Ronald Reagan labeling Mike Dukakis with the L word? It's a long tried and well tested methodology of defeating your political opponents. It's called playing the man and not the ball. At any rate, I mentioned on, I think it was Monday or Tuesday. Well, Tuesday I wasn't here, so maybe it was, I don't remember, but it's been within the last 7 days we talked about this virtue signaling of the Russian investigation, this idea that the whole thing here is less about what actually was said, done, or happened, and more about how you feel about it. And if you don't feel the right way, well, we'll just label you. So the Monday press conference happens, bizarre speeches and all that stuff. Within minutes of that, the mainstream media is all over the fact that this was a disaster. This was terrible. How dare the president say things like, we're here in the tradition of bold American diplomacy because we believe that discussion and engagement is better than conflict. How dare he say things like that? The McCain Republican people are just as angry. They're just as mad. How dare he do these things? How dare he say these kinds of things? What's going on here? Bah! And of course, people who are actually reading it or watching it are going, what the devil are you talking about? That didn't happen. But in the perception of the media and the perception of the country, well, it must have been a disaster because that's who's saying it is. Within minutes, well, I guess not within minutes, but Monday evening, I think, is the first time I saw this. The first time I remember actually seeing it was Tuesday morning, which was right after the evening of the press conference, and then that was the day we went to Mount Rainier, so I didn't get to talk about it that day. I had it in the hopper as proof of what I was talking about. But this ad that I played for you at the top of the show, and I'm going to play for you here again, this is a congressional ad in a congressional district near mine. This is not my congressional district now. It's actually over in Ellensburg, which is just east of the Cascade Mountains, about an hour east of Seattle, if you're looking at it that way. If you go up over the mountains and down, Ellensburg is just past the mountains, and it's where the wind blows really strong, and so there's a huge wind farm there. And this is the ad that this guy is running. Or maybe not. I guess I should turn it up, huh? Let's try that again.
I'm Jason Ritterizer. This election is about the future of our democracy. A choice between Trump supporter Dino Rossi or someone who will stand up to this administration. I became a criminal prosecutor to protect people and this country from harm. We just witnessed President Trump denounce American law enforcement and let Russia get away with attacking our nation. Here in Ellensburg, we call that treason.
Treason! Treason!
I'm Jason Ritterizer. I approve this message to change Congress before it's too late.
As if he really does that. This ad, to me, this is absolute proof of the virtue signaling of the Russian investigation. It's all it is. This guy is a lifelong Democrat, criminal prosecutor, who you would not associate these kinds of phraseologies with throughout the history of what he's done. Now, again, he starts in with, we're a democracy. Of course, we're a republic, but then we discussed yesterday, what does that actually mean? But here in Washington State, we don't have the same laws they have in California, so does that really count? But it's virtue signaling. It's signaling, we're a democracy, we're a democracy, we're a democracy, we're a democracy. What is a democracy? Democracy is fairness. Everybody gets a say. Everybody gets to have their input. Everybody gets a vote. Is that what a republic is? Is that what we are? But no, if we keep pounding on that word, how much easier is it then to say down line, well, let's be a democracy. You Trump supporters, you people that are supporting Trump, you people that are saying Trump is good, you're traitors, you're communists. You favor a guy who let Russia attack us. Wait, dude, is that what really happened? Did Donald Trump allow Russia to attack us? When did these attacks begin? When did the attacks on the 2016 election begin? Because really, these attacks have been going on since there was a Soviet Union, and probably before that, the Tsar had his secret police too. When did these attacks really begin? And did Donald Trump really allow them to happen? But the virtue signaling of this message is, if you support Trump, Trump supporter so-and-so is making our country bad. They're attacking law enforcement. Law enforcement. They're attacking law enforcement. That officer was stupid. What president said that? I'm just asking questions here. If you don't agree with what I'm saying, then you're the problem, you see. You're the problem that's going to be, you're the reason our country is falling apart. You're the reason that this is failing. You're the reason why, because you don't support, or you do support Trump and you don't support me. And we're just back to the same labeling system, the same virtue signaling systems that we've always used in our politics, going all the way back to the very beginning. Tippecanoe and Tyler too. What was the one about Grace, where's your dad? Gone to the White House, blah, blah, blah. I can't remember the last line. I mean, politics is all about virtue signaling. That's all it is. Because there's actually no substance here. I mean, this ad alone has mistakes in it that are easily provable, but no one will ever challenge this guy on. And if they do challenge it on it, what will they be called? You will never have a reasonable discussion with this guy, Jason Ritzenager, about this ad. If you say to him, dude, we're not a democracy, his response will be, you're a Trump supporter. You like Russia. If you say to him, these attacks began in 2016 under the previous president and previous administration, the response will be, you're a Trump supporter. You like Russia. You're a Russian sympathizer. You will have no rational conversation with this guy. You can't. Because if he has a rational conversation, a longer-term conversation, then the virtue signaling gets a bunch of holes poked in it. And off you go. And I suspect, and I'm actually being told in the chat room over here, that this is the kind of thing you're going to see around the country. You're going to see more and more of these kinds of ads. Trump attacked law enforcement. Trump allowed Russia to attack us. Trump is Russia. He's Russian. And if you love America, dun, 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 and you love the United States, and you love freedom and democracy, how can you possibly support this guy? Right? isn't it odd that the same people who, for all practical purposes, are in favor of the protest of the flag by the NFL players because, you know, it's their right, that damage or attack people who are patriotic are now appealing to those same people on the patriotism issue of Donald Trump let Russia attack us. How dare he? How dare he practice bold American diplomacy? How dare he do that? That's not what we want. Certainly not what Hillary Clinton would have done. She would have reset the whole thing, right? It's all virtue signaling, and once again, we see it pretty clearly, don't we? Whether it's effective or not will remain to be seen. There's a prevailing theory running about now in conservative chat radio about how this is driving Trump voters and Trump, you know, fence sitters back towards Trump. Again, it's a bit of an echo chamber, so the only people actually saying that are people who want to believe that. I don't know if it's true or not. It's certainly possible. I have certainly said on occasion that I did not vote for Trump the first time around. But there's a lot of stuff happening that would cause me to be more willing to vote for him the second time around based on the nonsense that's being, this is the kind of ad, written out ad, that would make me go, this guy's, he's just a politician. His lips are moving. He's just telling me what he thinks I want to hear. Oh my God, Russia attacked us and the president let us happen. Oh, we can't have that. He's just telling me what he's just playing to my patriotism. He's just playing to the fact that I'm a cold warrior. But I realize that, and I realize that what he's saying is nonsense. What I realize that he's saying is completely wrong. He didn't become a criminal prosecutor to protect me from the president of the United States and make this a better country. He became a prosecutor because it was a stepping stone in politics. Oh, that's not true, Dave? Really? Well, then why are you running for Congress? Why did this prepare you to run for Congress if that's not what your intent was? If you're such a damn good prosecutor, go prosecute. Stop worrying about things that aren't true. But he will never hear that message, and he will never pay attention to that message, even if he does hear it. He will continue the virtue signaling of, he allowed Russia to attack us. He allowed Russia to do this, and he basically kissed Putin's behind in front of the national television, and then, he's bad. We hate him. And if you don't agree with me, then you are a communist. Clearly you are. That was the first theory I gave you. The second theory I gave you earlier this week had to do with terrorism. And, you know, I've come a long way in 20 years. There was a time when I believed that terrorism was primarily religious-based, specifically dealing with PLRI terrorism, peace-loving religion of Islam. But I have come to change my beliefs about whether or not it's politically driven, political ideology is what I meant to say, rather than religious ideology. The truth of the matter is, what I'm finding is that most terrorism type acts are far more driven by religious ideology than they are by political ideology. ISIS, we talked at length about ISIS, ISIL, whatever you want to call them, being a doomsday cult. They believed fundamentally that their actions by taking over Dhaka and establishing a caliphate would in fact bring about the end of the world. The 12th Iman would come and hooray, they would get to live forever in paradise and all the rest of you filthy Jews would go to hell or whatever they have. We talked about the cult in Japan and how they believed that by poisoning people with sarin gas, they would bring about a war that would bring about the end of the world, and they would go to their version of heaven, and everybody else, you disgusting gaijin, would go to hell. See? And then we have the Bundys. My favorite people in America. The idiot Bundys. The idiot Bundys and their shill, Sean Hannity. And we spent way too much time on this back when it happened. But today, there's a news article out where Ammon Bundy, Captain Ammon, has informed us that the LDS Church, now again, I grew up in Utah and I am not LDS, never have been, never had the desire to be, have no interest in it, don't agree with it, all that. But I grew up in Utah and I found Utah to be a great place to live. I didn't necessarily have any problems living amongst the Mormons. I really didn't. In fact, it was kind of a nice place to live. It really was. Ammon Bundy, being a member of the Mormon Church, didn't know that, did you? Or maybe you did. But he tends to be a what the church calls fringe element of the church. He actually believes, he and Clive Bundy, they actually believe that the second coming will be brought about by their actions against the government of the United States. That Captain Moroni, who is a legendary Mormon figure, will come back to help them in their fight, thus bringing about the millennial kingdom, and they will get to enjoy the blessings of having lived their LDS life, and the rest of you filthy heathen Gentiles will go to hell. And that's the reason, the primary motivation of what they do, Bundy's do, is they do that because they're trying to bring about the end of the world. They don't care about the cattle. They don't care about the farmers. They don't care about the ranchers. They care about bringing about your destruction and their happiness. Yippee. Anyway, Bundy made the news this week when he informed us that the LDS Church is full of socialists. Talk about virtue signaling, huh? He's informed us that the LDS Church is full of socialists, and I'm not kidding. I'm not making this up. That because the church is full of socialists, let's see, it's infiltrated by socialists, is what he said. Claim that the federal government's prosecution of him and his supporters in Nevada and Oregon is really a battle of high priests of the LDS Church. Said this, his father, himself, and his attorney are all the high priests, but so are the lead U.S. attorney prosecuting his family. And, by the way, former U.S. Senator Harry Reid. Why would I come here and testify to you that I truly believe the Church of Jesus Christ, Latter-day Saints, is the true church and the Book of Mormon is true, and then let you tell you that we're being prosecuted by the high priest of the Church of Jesus Christ, Latter-day Saints? Why would I tell you these things, he said? Because I'm an insane lunatic. No, because the truth matters, he said. Went on to explain his view, the events detailed in the Book of Mormon and the Bible, have been repeating themselves over the past several years in confrontations with the government, and that eventually, apparently, Jesus is going to come back and going to send all the Gentiles to hell and all the Mormons to heaven. Well, all the Mormons that aren't socialists, I suppose. So far, I have presented two theories this week, in the past week, and my predictions are pretty much on. We continue to test. That's the scientific methodology. We don't just stop right there. We continue to watch these things and continue to test them downstream, see if they continue to be that way. And if they do, well, then we can say that the theory is true. And if they don't, well, then we got to go back to the drawing board and try to figure out why these nutballs are doing the things that they're doing. But in the meantime, I'm pretty well satisfied that the Russian investigation is nothing but virtue signaling and that Ammon Bundy is a nut, a religious nut who wants me to go to hell, and probably you too, unless you happen to agree with him. So there you go. It's half past. We've got to take a quick break. We'll be back right after this break. Stay with us.
This is the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network.
One in three adults in America have prediabetes, but most don't know it. To let people know it can be reversed before it becomes type 2 diabetes, professional basketball player Julius Randle is doing everything in reverse.
I'm only dunking with reverse windmills. I drove the whole way to practice in reverse. I don't recommend it. This move is called the reverse shuffle. I do recommend it. And it took me months to learn how to speak in reverse, like this. Here's 10 almost for diabetes type 2 with living Ben has mom my. In other words, my mom has been living with type 2 diabetes for almost 10 years. So together, we want to say to the 84 million Americans at risk,
Exercise and healthy eating can help reverse prediabetes. Start by taking a simple one-minute risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
Bet he can't say that in reverse.
Music is a bridge between the material and the spiritual. My name is Harvey Lauer, and I'm 82. As a blind person, you have to be aware that nobody can tell you what you can or can't do. You really have to try things. My folks got me a little radio in 1940, and that was the best Christmas present I ever got. When I was 11 years old is when I started to play music, play the piano, and then the accordion, and then the cello. My wife, who was also blind, was a good cook. When she died, that's when I started Meals on Wheels. America, let's do lunch.
One in six seniors faces the threat of hunger, and millions more live in isolation. Drop off a hot meal and say a quick hello. Volunteer for Meals on Wheels by donating your lunch break at AmericaLetsDoLunch.org. This message brought to you by Meals on Wheels America and the Ad Council.
Science Underground with your host, Anissa Ramirez.
This week, how invisibility cloaks from science fiction are becoming a science fact. I'm Anissa Ramirez, and this is
Science Underground.
Let's face it, all of us can use an invisibility cloak. Books and movies make them seem so cool. Well, the wait is nearly over. Scientists have made things invisible in the laboratory. How do you make something invisible? Let's say that you're looking at a leaf. The light bounces off the surface of the leaf and heads in a straight line towards your eye. And the brain translates this bounce light as a leaf. But if you fool the brain, then that leaf becomes invisible. Objects become invisible by tricking the brain.
So if you want to think about invisibility, essentially it's an optical illusion.
That's John Howe, a physics professor at the University of Rochester. He created an invisibility cloak. Now, light moves in straight lines, and the brain interprets this light to see an object. If you want to make something invisible, you have to curve light around that object, just like a stream of water curves around a rock. If you're looking at that stream of water some distance from that rock, then you'd have no clue that that rock was there.
You don't know that that water that's flowing past you went around a rock upstream. And essentially, you don't know that the rock was there if you look down the stream, you know, 30 feet away.
This is what invisibility cloaks are doing with light. They guide light. Scientists have found ways to bend light around the thing that you're looking at so that you can't see it. What's weird is that you can touch it, but your eyes can't pick it up. Scientists are able to do this by using a few special magnifying glasses and lenses, like those you'd see in a camera. By placing these lenses a certain distance apart, the light is then focused and detoured around the object to make it invisible. So far, researchers have been able to make something the size of a hand invisible. What's clear is that bending light makes things out of sight. I'm Anissa Ramirez, and this was
Science Underground.
You are listening to The Dave Bowman Show on the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network.
Hey, welcome back. If you want to join me? Text machine, voicemail machine, area code 209-565-DAVE. It's 565-3283. Email remains Dave at thedavebowmanshow.com. And of course, we're on the web. Just look for The Dave Bowman Show on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and even at thedavebowmanshow.com. It's Friday, man. It's going to be a great weekend up here. I don't know where you are, but it's going to be hot here. It's going to be close to 90. Things are going to be a little... Yeah, I know. I only say that because the chat room is full of Central California people. It's going to be hot here. Not like there. Or other parts of the country. I mean, hot is relative, right? Hot in the Pacific Northwest is 90. God, I would have killed for 90-degree days when I lived in California. So that 110. I feel for you. I really do. Anyway, it's going to be a great weekend, and looking forward to, I don't know what we're doing. Cammie has the weekend off, which is unusual, but she has the weekend off. Ben's out of school, and We're gonna have to find something to do, something different. We went to Mount Rainier the other day. Maybe go over to Olympics and drive Hurricane Ridge again or something. We'll figure out something. Other topics of interest to me on a Friday. Many of you know that I'm a sports guy. I love baseball. The commissioner of baseball has informed us that he has a plan for expansion. He's got a plan to add more teams to the baseball, Major League Baseball. And I'm not sure how I feel about that. I'm sort of okay with it, but I'm cautious about it because the problem is that baseball has probably too many teams already. I mean, it's getting to the point now where the talent pool has been diminished a little bit. But at the same time, I also think that there's, you know, places to put people. He's looking at the following six cities: Portland, Las Vegas, Charlotte, Nashville, Montreal, perhaps Vancouver, and someplace in Mexico. I look, as much as I love baseball, and you know I do, I'm watching the Baseball Network over there on my other screen. Apparently, I'm being cast by Dwayne on his 50-inch flat screen. That's cool. Ugh, I'm messing with Dwayne's flat screen. Sorry. I'm goofy. It's Friday. I don't see expansion into Mexico as rational or even reasonable. Back in the day, they had problems with the teams in Canada. It's one of the problems that the Montreal Expos had was bringing players in because of the taxes in Canada were different. The pay structure was different. The Canadian dollar was worth less than the American dollar. Plus, and I know this sounds bad, but you had to live in Canada or Buffalo, New York, one of the two. I mean, no, that's across from Toronto. What's across from Montreal? Detroit. There were a lot of drawbacks to it. And the problem with Mexico, and I know that Mexico loves baseball. Mexico has a fantastic AAA league. They have a lot of very passionate fans for baseball. And on the occasion when sports have gone down there, they've been very supportive of it and that sort of things. But the problem is you're going to have to convince players to go down there and live because you're going to have to live at least half of the season in that, wherever that is, whether that's Veracruz or Mexico City, the most likely, which is, you know, up in the atmosphere and it's the air quality is crap. And then you've got the whole issue of pay. You've got the whole issue of taxes. You've got the whole issues. Mexico City to me is just not going to work. It really isn't. If you're looking at international expansion outside of the United States and Canada, you're almost going to have to look at either Japan or Korea, where they have really good baseball leagues as well. And I don't say that to criticize Mexico. That's not my point here, but you're going to have the same issues that you had with Canadian baseball in the 70s and 80s that led to the fact that Toronto is the only Canadian team left. Now, I do know that when the Mariners here play the Blue Jays, you get half the stands. The Kingdom seats about a Kingdom. Safeco, which soon will not be Safeco anymore, seats about, I think it's about 40, 43,000. And easily half of those people are Canadians who have come down from Vancouver, to see their beloved Canadian team play. And it's almost like a home game for the Blue Jays when they come to Seattle. That's not to say Mariner fans don't go. They do, but, you know, the average is right around, you know, 19, 20,000 fans, and all of a sudden the rest of the tickets aren't available because the Canadians have sucked them up, and you can't go to a game here on Blue Jay weekend, especially when they're here on a weekend. You give up. You're not going to go to that game. So the Canadians obviously like baseball. They obviously support their Canadian teams. The issues in Montreal were not attendance-based. They were revenue-based. And as much as I would like to see the Expos come back, and I would, and I know my good friend Chris Teixeira would like to see that as well, I just don't know that that's just don't know that it's viable. I really don't. Toronto is doing okay, but they got that Sky Dome stadium that makes a big difference, that, you know, produces revenue for them. And can Montreal do that as well? I just don't know. Vancouver is reasonable, but again, now you get into issues of market sharing with Seattle. Seattle's already a small market team. They're already struggling with those kinds of things. Do you want to take a bite out of that? And the same with Portland. You're going to run into the same issues there. You're going to run into the same conflicts there. Let's see. Las Vegas. That is intriguing more and more sports. Obviously, the Golden Knights did very well. The Raiders, ever loyal to their fan base in Oakland, are going to move to Las Vegas. Not only that, they fired Bob Papa the other day. Did you see that? Longtime Raider announcer who's annoying as hell. And again, I hate the Oakland Raiders. Always have, always will. Their announcer drives me in a touchdown Raiders. I hate that. Fortunately, I haven't had to listen to much of that in the last few years. At any rate, they're moving to Las Vegas. They fired Bob Papa and they hired Brent Musburger to do their radio instead. Not making that up. Charlotte is an interesting idea. Because it's halfway between Atlanta and Washington, D.C. You could pull that off. Nashville is certainly intriguing. I think it's a little too close to Atlanta. But Nashville is a great city. And those are all the ideas that they're throwing out there. I'm not against, you know, the expansion of Major League Baseball. It's not something I'm again. But I don't know how you're going to do it and keep the revenue situation going the way it's supposedly going. Baseball has become so regionalized now. It's not like the NFL where you have national broadcasts, you know, of five games a week, and you have this big television contract that sorts out, you know, money to the small market. Each team has to develop its own television revenue, its own television deal. And so that's how you get these sports networks, Root, Sportsnet, whatever. And it doesn't always work. Even in Los Angeles right now, if you live in Los Angeles, California, you probably cannot watch the Dodgers on television because they can't get a TV deal that works. And so one of the biggest teams and one of the biggest markets is not on television down there, unless you have the right cable system, which of course is the smallest cable system. And for the last 3 or 4 years, they've been battling out and they can't get the biggest market in the world. Well, baseball world anyway, can't get a deal to get one of the biggest teams on local television. It's bizarre. It happens. I'm thankful up here. We don't have that problem. Seattle's on every day. And well, except for the last few days. So I'm able to watch the Mariners and I enjoy that very much. And even though I have MLB.TV and so I can watch other games, but It's nice to know that my team's going to be on and I don't have to miss that. Well, that's part of the problems you run into with these kind of revenue issues with television and the likes of that. And so expansion, it's a good idea in the one direction. It creates more interest, more people and all that. But at the same time, it doesn't necessarily work financially. We'll have to see what they do. The NFL continues to shoot itself in the foot. The Miami Dolphins. It's everybody tells me I should be a dolphin fan. I love dolphins, actual marine mammals. I have collections of dolphins everywhere, not in here, but paintings of dolphins. And everybody says, why aren't you a dolphin fan? I don't know. I've just never liked the dolphins. Just never have. But the Dolphins yesterday issued an internal memo to their team. They issued an internal memo outlining their new policy about the national anthem protests and all the people that are protesting national anthems, and how if they do that from now on, it will be considered conduct detrimental to the team and you will be fined and or suspended and possibly even fired. This is an internal memo, so within minutes, the AP had it and they put it out on the wires, and everybody in the world had read about the new Miami Dolphins policy with regards to anthem protests. And being a virtue signaling world, you know what happened, right? Immediately, people were offended that the Miami Dolphins would tell their employees how to behave on the job, right? And this led to an explosion of talk radio, sports talk radio, arguing about whether or not the players should be protesting, should not be protesting. What it is, it doing any good? Is it not doing any good? Is it maddening? Is it angering? What is this, that? Which led to the quote of the day for me, which was a sports talk radio guy. Okay, just let that settle for a second. Sports talk radio. Sports talk radio. Sports talk radio. The operative words here being radio, explaining to his audience that the NFL is the only business in the world where the labor is the product. A guy on radio told his audience that the NFL is the only business where the product is the labor. Okay, dude. At that point, you just kind of go, yeah, I don't know what this guy's... I get the passions that this argument brings out about whether or not you should protest, whether you should not protest, whether it's a First Amendment issue, whether it's a work-related issue, whether it's this, whether it's that. But the point is, at this point, all those arguments are, they're just moot. I mean, really, how you feel about that argument says more about your politics than it does about the argument. It really does at this point, because we're faced with a de facto issue, which is that players now are digging in their heels to protest while fans are digging in their heels for non-protesting. And what's end up happening? The game ultimately gets hurt. And nobody in the NFL seems to have any idea how to handle this. They don't seem to have any idea what to do. They don't seem to understand that the toothpaste is out of the tube. You're not going to put it back in. You can't go back to the way it was. You can't. You're always, if you squash it down, the players are going to resent that. And if you start firing players for doing it, then, you know, you're going to end up with another strike, which is going to kill your game, which is already being hurt. If the fans don't get what they want, they're going to continue to not show up in droves, and you're going to lose revenues, and you're going to lose interest, and you're going to lose ratings. And there's no win here for the NFL. None. At all. Well, actually, there is. There is a way that the NFL could handle this, but they're not paying me, you know, $500 million a year to advise them. If I were the commissioner, let's play that game. If I were the commissioner one day, what would I do? How would I solve this NFL problem? Okay, how? And again, I'm a patriot. I'm very patriotic. I like the national anthem. I've mentioned on numerous occasions that one of the things I love about where I live is that from where I live, I can hear colors on the base. So at 8 o'clock in the morning, the bugle sounds, call to attention, the national anthem plays. And if I'm outside where I can hear it, where I can, you know, be at attention, I come to attention and I either salute or put my hand over my heart, one of the two. And I wait until the national anthem is over, and none of my neighbors think that's weird at all. In the evenings, depending at sundown, whenever that might be, sometimes around here as early as 3:45 in the afternoon, but sometimes as late as 9:20-ish, the same thing happens in reverse. And if I'm outside, I stop, and if I don't, I remember the first time we were on base, but I had to take Cammie over to the base to get her ID or something, and she doesn't know anything about this stuff or didn't know anything about this stuff at the time. And we were walking down one of the streets and the call to attention sounded and I just stopped. Everybody stopped except Cammie because she had no idea what was going on. And she turns around and looks at me and says, looking at everybody. It was pretty funny. But it's also kind of nice. I really like that. I love the national anthem. It's a great, I think the national anthem, all these people that talk about, we need to change the national anthem. It's too hard to sing. It's too hard to, I don't understand the word. You're an idiot. Go actually learn to read. Go actually learn some history and then come talk to me. The song is fantastic. It's beautiful. And it's the tune is stolen from the British. How much better can it be? It's a British drinking song. That's perfect for the United States of America. It really is. At any rate, how would I solve their little problem? Well, the first thing you're going to have to realize is there's no perfect solution to the problem. Okay, you're either going to piss off some of the players or you're going to piss off the fans. And so you're going to have to come to a decision. Which is more important? Which do we actually need? And you might say, well, we got to have the players. and I'm going to tell you that you're wrong. Football players, with the exception of one position, football players are a dime a dozen. Name the seven offensive linemen that your team has right now, without even hesitating. Name them. Folks, I follow the Broncos religiously. I couldn't even tell you one. I don't know. Don't have a clue. I think we have a new quarterback. Did we get the guy from the Vikings? Which sucks because I'm a Brock Osweiler guy. Anyway, point being that you could replace any of these players, and for the most part, nobody would notice the difference. And in fact, there are plenty of players who would love the opportunity to be there. The players are not, with very few exceptions, the players are not the real draw to the game. The draw to the game is the game. So you need to improve the game. You need to distract from the other issue and smother it and kill it. And the NFL could very easily do that by improving the game. The game right now is the problem. The reason that the ratings are down, the reason people don't want to go is because right now the play of the game sucks. It's atrocious. It's bad. Why do we have to wait 10 freaking minutes every time there's a play to determine whether or not it was a catch? You want to improve football 50% right off the bat without a question? Get rid of replay. Get rid of instant replay. Oh, but Dave, it's there to make things right. No, it's not. If it was there to make things right, then it would make things right. But half the time, at least, you're watching the call and you're going, that was clearly an incomplete pass. And then the official comes out and says, the call on the field is confirmed, catch. And you're looking at it going, what the hell is he looking at? Because he's sure not looking what I'm looking at. It's a judgment call. Make it a judgment call. Get rid of replay. I don't like replay in baseball either, but at least for the most part, they get it right. In the NFL, they don't. And then the second problem with replay is the things that they actually need to review, they don't. Was that really pass interference? What about this holding call? They don't review those things. They don't look at the judgment calls, but then they do look at judgment calls. Get rid of that right now. It slows the game down. It's not right half of the time. It creates controversy. You know, football was great when you had referees who did a great job because they knew that their call was going to stand, and so they damn well better get it right. And unless you're a Houston Oilers fan from the 1970s, you're pretty much aware that the referees, for the most part, got it right. Unless you're a Oakland Raiders fan in the Pittsburgh, you know, and unless you're a Houston Oilers fan, unless you're not a Dallas Cowboy fan, you're pretty much sure that they get it right. If you improve the game, if the game becomes more watchable, if the game becomes more enjoyable, if it becomes more focused on the game, then all the other issues are going to go away. I can put up with all the other crap about that if the game is worth watching. I canceled my DirecTV Sunday NFL ticket the other day because I can't take it anymore. I just can't watch a football game where, you know, I've got, I don't know, pick two teams, Tennessee and Cleveland, and we're arguing about whether or not he stepped out of bounds or not by a micrometer, and we've got this, you know, gigantic tennis-like camera, and we got to spend 10 minutes doing that after every third play. Oh, we've changed the kickoff now, and, you know, I get it, player safety. Believe me, I understand that more than most people do, but at the same point, you get to this whole thing where the game just sucks. And then you combine the fact that the game sucks with the controversy on top of it, and now you've got a recipe for losing. Improve the game. Make the game better. And I suspect that your other problems, they might not ever completely go away. But you won't have pundits on national media explaining that the reason your ratings are bad is because of this controversy. And the NFL needs to become more patriotic. These players need to get in line. These players need to be more, you know, compliant with what the fan base wants. And you can read that any way you want. If you improve the game, then that problem goes away. If you don't, well, then it's probably going to be an issue. Probably going to be a continue to be a problem. And as long as it continues to be a problem, the NFL is going to continue to lose money and continue to lose fans and continue to lose arguments, and we're not going to get anywhere. And football season will come and go, and most of us won't even miss it at this point, is the way it's going. So, there you go. Great. I'm sorry, a technical problem with the station right now, and I don't even know if I'm on the air anymore. Hopefully I am, but if I'm not, well, there you go. All right, folks, that closes out a Friday. Hope you had a good week. Hope you learned some things. Hope you enjoyed the show, and I missed the Stockton ports too, Tim. I miss you, quite frankly. I need to get back into the gym, and that's, you were always one of my motivators. At any rate, we're going to get going, and that's weird. I got to get running. Take the time right now. Tell the people that matter in your life you love them very much. You'd miss them if they weren't there, so don't pass up those opportunities. You don't want to have that regret. Plausibly Live, I am Dave Bowman, and this is my show, The Dave Bowman Show, right here on the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. I tell you, Tim Preuss is coming up next, but I don't know if he is or not. The station's kind of acting weird, so maybe Tim next, maybe not. It may pick something else. Who knows? It's supposed to play Tim's show next, and if not, you can always get his show at podcast99.org, where you can also find my show, Jay Brown's This Week in Politics, as well as The Ale Evangelist, all the great shows we have for you at podcast99.org. Okay? Make sure you're looking at that and seeing what's happening there. And, of course, we're over at thedavebowmanshow.com. You can always find me there. Send me a text. Send me a voicemail. Area code 209-565-DAVE. Email Dave at thedavebowmanshow.com. Have a wonderful weekend, everybody. We will see you on Monday for a brand new episode of The Dave Bowman Show on the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network.
Show is a Slippery Fish Entertainment production for the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. For more information or to complain about how the show offended you, the text or voicemail number is 209-565-DAVE. For more information about the show, log on to thedavebowmanshow.com.
Hey, I'm going to go do something productive. I'm going to go watch television.